have lived in the area for a long time, a baseline expectation regarding home values is set in their minds. When something has been away for a long time, we assume it should be that way. And when change is proposed or made known, it catches us off guard and feels wrong. We see this whenever a new boss starts at a company. Many of the employees will say things like, "That's not the way we used to do it." Usually, nobody is asking how things used to be done, so the only reason for someone to say that is to express their surprise with the current changes. We see this take place in real estate when people seem shocked that prices are rising. It is a clear indication that buyers and their agents know prices are rising, but this information hasn't made it to the general public yet. If the general public doesn't know, you still have a shot to start scooping up properties before it's too late. If people are commenting with shock that properties are rising in value, there is a really good chance the path of progress is knocking at the door. Key points. Find preliminary rent estimates on rentometer.com. Use BiggerPockets calculators to run numbers. Get more accurate rental estimates from property managers. Look for an area with growing employment opportunities. Know the DOM, days on market, of the area you're investing in. The shorter the DOM, the hotter the market. Use Craigslist.org for rental comparables. Look for signs of construction downtown. Buy in the path of progress. Look for barriers to entry. Geographic and economic barriers are big. Chapter 7. Tenant Tips. All wealth comes from adding value, from producing more, better, cheaper, faster, and easier than someone else. Brian Tracy. Part of being a successful investor is finding the right tenants. If you consider that buying a property is really nothing more than buying a small business that produces income, it becomes very apparent the only income an investment property will generate is the rent. Since there is no way to earn additional income other than waiting for rent to increase with time, keeping our expenses in check becomes crucial to our success. Without a doubt, the two biggest expenses that hurt your bottom line when it comes to real estate investing are repairs and vacancy. 1 month of vacancy can wipe out a year's worth of rent increases from a new listing agreement. One tenant destroying a property can wipe out several years of cash flow. With this being said, choosing your tenants wisely can make you quite a bit of money. Several factors go into choosing tenants wisely, and it's important you understand them before buying a property. How to find and keep great tenants. If you want to find the best tenant, consider the process of choosing the best buyer for your home when you're selling it. As a realtor, I've learned the number one factor that determines what a house sells for isn't the money that's being spent upgrading it or what the seller believes it's worth. By far, the one and only metric that affects the price a home sells for is how many people want it. Every single thing I do to market a home, every decision I make, is geared toward drawing multiple offers. Once we receive multiple offers, the ball is in my court. I have the ability to drive the price higher. I have the ability to counter the buyers to improve their terms. I have the ability to pit buyers against each other and capitalize on their emotional state of wanting the home more than it makes sense to. When I get multiple offers, I put my clients in the driver's seat. Listing a home for rent is very similar to listing a home for sale. The more potential interest you can gather, the more you can tweak the terms of the lease and the rent amount in your favor. Knowing this, I've learned there are certain things I can do to improve my odds of finding the best tenants and finding multiple tenants who want my property. The following are some of the techniques I've used to do just that. Buy near hospitals. As we discussed earlier, the economic engine of a market is a huge driver toward the success of that market. Buying near a hospital is one of the single most critically important things you can do to ensure you always have a steady stream of reliable, well-employed, professional tenants willing to rent your property. Renting to tenants like this isn't a guarantee you won't have problems, but it does put the odds significantly in your favor. Hospitals hire highly educated employees for most of the positions they need to fill. Doctors, nurses, anesthesiologists, bookkeepers, insurance workers, floor managers, they all require varying levels of education and professionalism. This is good for the quality of tenant looking to rent near a hospital. Additionally, not only do hospitals tend to hire highly educated employees, they also hire part-time, traveling employees to fill many of their positions. Why does this matter to you as a landlord? Traveling employees taking part-time positions in hospitals who know they will be leaving in a matter of months or years aren't very likely to buy a property to live in when they know they'll be leaving the area soon. So what are they going to do when it comes to looking for somewhere to live? They are going to rent. Where is the first place they are going to look? As close to the hospital as they can get. Many successful investors have raved about the success they've had buying near hospitals. If you ever have the opportunity to scoop something up near one, I highly recommend you look into it. One technique I like is to have my real estate agent set up a search for an area that is geographically half a mile around each hospital in town. I then have the agent add my other criteria into the equation, such as number of bedrooms, bathrooms, and price. Whenever a property hits the market that meets these criteria in this stage, I get an email notification alerting me so I can consider making an offer. Buy in areas where pride of ownership is apparent. Pride of ownership is hard to define, but I know it when I see it. The idea to this technique is to look to buy properties in areas where the other tenants and owners are taking good care of their property, because your tenants will be more likely to do the same. In police work, we have a concept known as the broken window theory. It is based on a study that showed if a run-down part of town was allowed to stay run down, the people who lived there would have an easier time keeping it that way. The theory was introduced in 1982 by social scientists James Q. Wilson and George L. Kelling. It gained traction in 1993 when the New York mayor, Rudy Giuliani, made it a priority for the New York Police Department to implement. In the article, Broken Windows, published in March 1982 in The Atlantic Monthly, Wilson and Kelling stated, "Consider a building with a few broken windows. If the windows are not repaired, the tendency is for vandals to break a few more windows. Eventually, they may even break into the building, and if it's unoccupied, perhaps become squatters or light fires inside. Or consider a pavement. Some litter accumulates. Soon, more litter accumulates. Eventually, people even start leaving bags of refuse from takeout restaurants there, or even break into cars." The authors of the study concluded when someone lives in an area where things are taken care of, they tend to stay that way. When someone saw a building with a broken window, they were more likely to think it was okay to pick up a brick and throw it, breaking another window. When this happens repeatedly, all the windows ended up broken, and people were more likely to litter, commit vandalism, etc. Small crimes, when left unchecked, led to bigger crimes, including increases in violent crimes like robbery, rape, and murder. The theory was used as a police tactic to cut down on small crimes, infractions, in order to try to prevent more serious crimes, leading to an improvement in the police statistical numbers for New York City. It goes to show the psychology of the human mind and how it relates to its surroundings. Most of us will be on our best behavior when surrounded by others who are, or when the standard is set higher. When in an environment with low expectations and others behaving poorly, most people will lower their standard to that of the group. This is highlighted in mob mentality, where people do things in a riot they would never do alone. If we know this is how people behave, it makes sense to make the most of this information when developing our investment strategy. If you buy a property in an area where the majority of the neighbors let their lawns overgrow, your tenants are much more likely to do the same. If the majority of the homeowners leave their trash in the front yard or keep broken down vehicles on the property, your tenants will as well. This is why we buy in areas known for pride of ownership. It doesn't need to be a Class A property. It just needs to be in an area with a high standard maintained by the majority of those who live there. If the neighbors are applying social pressures, albeit often subconsciously, to maintain the standard of the neighborhood, your tenants are more likely to adopt that same mindset. This means good things for your property and the way your tenants will maintain it. Additionally, consider that the best tenants will not feel comfortable living in a property where the neighborhood is full of broken windows and vandalism. If there is low pride of ownership, the best tenants are going to feel uncomfortable and look to pass. Finding a neighborhood with fewer broken windows gives you a higher chance of success when it comes to keeping your repair costs lower and the quality of your tenants higher. And once you find tenants who show pride of ownership, you should reward them. You may be asking why you should have to spend money to reward someone for something they should be doing anyway. That's a fair question. My challenge to you is, ask yourself if it's fair to expect everyone else to think the same way you do. Let's take a step back and look at this situation from a broader perspective and see if that provides a little more clarity. Those of you reading this book have already shown several things that separate you from the majority of investors. 1. You invested money into your education by buying this book. 2. You invested time into your future by setting aside time to read it. 3. You want to own investment property, which requires some work to be done and oftentimes doesn't provide an immediate reward. 4. You are willing to spend your money on an investment, not just on yourself or gratifying your immediate needs. 5. You understand that it takes something to get something. To those of us who live our lives this way, this all seems like common sense. To those who may live their lives differently, these are all foreign concepts. Many humans have never been exposed to this kind of thinking and don't see the world through this viewpoint. This is relevant because more often than not, these are the kinds of people who are renting our properties. Let's examine some of the reasons people rent instead of buy. 1. Renting makes more sense than buying for those who have a temporary job or some other reason that requires them to move often. 2. Renting is usually cheaper than buying short-term, but much more costly long-term. 3. Buying requires the ability to get a loan, which requires a healthy debt-to-income ratio. 4. Getting a loan also requires a healthy credit score. 5. Getting a loan requires a down payment in most cases, and renting allows one to save up for this down payment. With the exception of the first example, the other reasons people rent tend to center around the fact that buying a home requires a higher standard of finance management than renting one does. Sure, renting a home may be cheaper than buying one, but 10, 20, or 30 years later, do you really believe it still will be? Rents tend to go up everywhere. Mortgage payments do not. Tenants and landlords do not think the same way, so you, as a landlord, need to tailor your strategy for success around your tenants. If you want your tenants to pay on time, you must reward them for doing so and punish them for not doing so, and then be consistent about that. If you want your tenants to maintain the landscaping, keep the house clean and in good condition, and not get you fined by the city for code violations, you need to treat them to do just that. When you notice the tenant is keeping great care of the lawn, reward them. One easy way is to wait for the lease renewal, and if the property is kept in good condition, tell the property manager to talk with the tenant and only raise their rent by $50 a month instead of the usual $100. Buy near great schools. As mentioned earlier, properties near the best schools tend to appreciate the most. This leads to higher-priced homes attracting wealthier families, which oftentimes leads to more well-behaved children attending those schools, increasing the school's scores even more. This virtual cycle can ensure property values don't drop as much during a recession and will increase more during a good economy. We want to take advantage of this. To understand this principle, we again have to acknowledge this isn't always the case, but more often than not is the way it works. People who value their children's education want to live near the best schools and will pay a premium to live there. If they are willing to pay more to live near the best schools, they will usually personally invest much more heavily in their child's lives. Buying near great schools is likely to get you home appreciation, but it's also likely to get you a better tenant. Buying near top-scoring schools is a way to stack the odds in your favor toward finding a higher quality tenant. Higher quality tenants save and make you money in many ways. These are the people who are more likely to be able to afford the rising rent. They are also less likely to trash your property or allow things like water drips to go unreported. They will either fix it or notify you immediately. This leads to less likelihood of mold, dry rot, or other forms of water damage. These properties are also in higher demand, so your vacancy rates will be lower as well. Lower vacancy. With vacancy being one of the biggest enemies of your bottom line, you want to look for ways to reduce its negative impact on your profitability. The good news is there are several things you can do to help your cause in that way, and none of them are too difficult or complicated to pull off. Most of these strategies are all things that work if you go into the situation knowing what your plan will be from the start, and make efforts to set yourself up for success before buying the property. In certain situations, demand is so high, you can advertise a unit for rent with a maximum price and people will still be lined up to rent it. In others, this isn't the case, so we have to be a little more resourceful. To understand how to maximize this tactic, we are going to take a look into human psychology and learn the mindset of buyers and tenants and what drives their decision-making process so we can develop our strategy around them. Let's focus on two powerful human character flaws, our greed and our laziness. The vast majority of tenants or buyers want to pay as little as possible for whatever property they buy or rent, but they are usually too lazy or need to move under a fast timeline in order to look deeply enough into the entire process to understand exactly how they can save money. This is why we lower the rent from the start. We want someone in that property ASAP. It rarely makes sense to have a unit vacant for even 1 week more than it needs to be. The extra rent we may be collecting is usually very small compared to the rent we could lose during an extra month's vacancy. Let's take a look at a hypothetical example. Short-sighted Steve bought a duplex to rent out as an investment property. Steve ran his numbers and saw he could rent the unit out for anywhere between $1,000 and $1,100 a month. Steve's PM told him the units were typically renting out in 30 to 90 days after being advertised. Steve was smart enough to buy in an area with a healthy economy and more jobs moving in. Additionally, wages were rising in this area, and it was known for its top-rated schools. Steve did everything right. Then, when it came time to rent out the property, his short-sighted nature came back to bite him. Steve insisted on advertising the property for rent at $1,100 a month. He knew at the end of the year that would net him an additional $1,200 minus property management fees. Steve wanted every penny. As you can guess, Steve's unit sat empty for longer than it needed to. Rather than finding a tenant after 30 days or so, it took Steve 90. Steve ended up finding a tenant to pay the full $1,100, but the rest of the tenants who viewed Steve's property didn't see why they should pay $1,100 a month when there were plenty of options available at $1,000. The tenants instead went to the cheapest option available. Steve won the battle, but lost the war. Had he advertised the unit for $1,000 or even $950 a month, he could have landed a tenant in 30 days or sooner. Because he insisted on a higher rent, he collected an extra $1,200 at the end of the year, over what he would have collected at $1,000 a month. But he incurred $2,000 in lost revenue, 2 months of $1,000 a month. Had he just advertised the unit for less to find a tenant ASAP? Steve's short-sighted perspective cost him $800. Now, you may be wondering if this is really the best option. After all, that extra $1,200 a year will add up over several years, right? If you give it enough time, this strategy would make more sense. The beauty of this strategy is we aren't done. There is a whole other element to this strategy we haven't covered yet. That being, after the first year, we raise the rent back to what maximum rent for the area would be and watch as most of the tenants would rather pay than move. Why does this work? The vast majority of people will not want to move out of their home, pay a moving company to move their stuff, or bother their friends, turn off the power, garbage, electric, cable, etc. in their name, then move it all over to a new property, or pull their kids out of their great school, all to save $100 a month. This, of course, does not apply to college rentals or other yearly rental situations where students move in and out of apartments each year during school. This is why we start by advertising a unit at a cheaper price, get someone in right away, then make up for that lost rent in year one over the next 30, 40, or 50 years we own that property. Once our tenants are established in their new home, they aren't going to want to leave unless something very compelling pushes them out, and we can take advantage of that to bring rent back to market level as soon as it's time to renew their lease. Another way to decrease your vacancy period is very simple. Be good at your job of being a landlord. When something breaks, fix it quickly. When your attention is needed, give it promptly. Don't let you, as the owner, be the reason your tenant decides to move out and find a different property because you acted like a slumlord. Handle things correctly on your end, and your tenants will be less likely to leave. Now, it's clearly my position that for most of us, we should be using property management to handle our rentals. If this is the case for you, you don't need to be good at your job of landlording, but you do need to hire someone who is good. Finding a great, responsible, and wise property manager will shorten your vacancy periods because your tenants will have less reason to go through the inconvenience of a move in areas where most people don't move each year. Another perk of hiring a property manager is you don't have to be the bad guy. They do. Oftentimes, my tenants make frivolous requests for things not covered in the lease. They usually are requests the tenant could easily handle themselves. Things like asking me to replace the lawnmower when theirs breaks because the lease states the lawn must be mowed, or asking me to replace air filters or light bulbs, or to repair things they broke. I know the right answer is to say no, but do I really want to be the jerk who says it? This is why you want a PM. Let them be the jerk. Actually, it's easy for them to say no because they get to blame you, the anonymous owner. I'm sorry, Mr. Smith, but unfortunately the landlord has denied your request to replace the window you broke playing catch in the house with your son. It looks like you'll have to pay for that yourself. See how much easier it is for them when they can blame us? See how much easier it is for us when we can have them be the bad guy? Another great hack you can use to lower your vacancy involves something as simple as the date you write in your lease. In most parts of the country, the majority of leases are set for 1 year and then become month to month after that. During that year's time, rents usually rise. If a tenant stops paying rent during the time period of the lease, they can be sued. Once the lease is up, the tenant can give their notice and move out of your unit without owing you anything. This becomes a problem when the tenant decides to leave during a time of year when nobody else is looking to rent or buy. Typically, this is the case during the winter months. If you find you have a vacant unit during this time, you may be lowering the rent dramatically or finding your unit sits unoccupied for much longer than normal. This increased vacancy can kill your bottom line, all when it doesn't need to be that way at all. If you have a tenant move in during the winter, don't assume you need a 12-month lease that will also expire during the winter. Consider a 15 to 16-month lease for the first run, and time it to expire in the spring when other people are looking to buy or sell. This way, when you get a winter vacancy, you're primed to have a house to sell or a rental to advertise when everyone else is already looking. This one simple move can decrease your vacancy by thousands of dollars over time. The vast majority of tenants are not going to care if the lease is for 15 to 16 months instead of 12 months because it's less common for people to move into a new unit expecting to only live there for a year if they really like the location and the property. If anything, they are buying themselves a few more months of last year's rent before the new rent hike comes in. If you do this right, you only have to do it for the first year. Then your lease will be set to expire at the perfect time of year, every time, every year. Self-management versus professional management. With all this talk about using a property manager, how do we know if it's the right choice for us? Hiring a property manager sounds more convenient, but it's also more expensive. Managing a property ourselves can save us money, but is it really worth all the headache? Before you can determine if you should manage your own property or if someone else should, let's examine some of the pros and cons to each. By matching up the benefits to each method, it's much easier to decide which is right for you. Pros to self-management. First off, there are two major pros to self-management that compel the overwhelming majority of those who practice this method to do so. They are, 1. No one will care about your property as much as you do. 2. Like every other service, property management costs money. With both reasons being important, I still believe number one is the more important reason to self-manage, should you go that route. Your taking care of and treating your property with a high level of effort is by far the best reason to commit to self-management of a property. Property managers, like everyone else, are a mixed bag. Some are good, most are not, and a handful are exceptional. Odds are, no matter who you use, they won't care as much as you do, and that's something you need to accept right away. If you can't accept it, self-management may be the only option that will keep you sane. A property manager's job is to keep your unit occupied, in reasonably good shape, and money flowing into your bank account. They'll likely do the bare minimum simply because it's not their property. Many investors drive by their properties routinely and notice things like newspapers piling up in the driveway, the shrubbery overgrown, or the lawn not being cut. For some people, this drives them crazy and robs them of their peace of mind. For these kinds of people, self-management may be necessary just to stay sane. When I rent my property out to someone else, I relinquish control of maintaining my personal standards because I can't impose those on someone else. All I can legally impose are the details contained in the lease. The biggest pro to self-management is the fact you get more control over the property. You get more control over the lease you have the tenant sign. If you see something you don't like, you can have it corrected. Also, you're more likely to see things you don't like if you're paying more attention. Property managers will walk the property according to the amount of times you pay them to. If you self-manage, you don't have to worry about spending a dime to walk the property, which means you're more likely to go to your property and make sure it's up to your standards. Many people don't realize it, but property management often charges for more than just collecting rent. Property management can charge you for walking the property, advertising the property for rent, collecting rent, managing a rehab, managing repairs, and renewing the lease, even if the same tenant remains. When you manage your own property, you do all this work, but you also avoid having to pay for it. For those with more time and less money, this can often be a better strategy for managing your rental. Cons to self-management. The biggest con to self-management is the amount of time and energy it takes to do so. This, frankly, can ruin real estate investing for many different types of personalities. In my opinion, property management is the worst part of real estate investing. It is demanding, gives the least amount of satisfaction, and provides none of the thrill of the hunt that makes investing exciting. Finding a great deal can feel like making a great play. If real estate investing was football, finding and closing on a deal is the equivalent to a wide receiver catching a touchdown pass. If we stick with this analogy, property management is like the offensive line. Underappreciated, no glory, no fun, and only gets blamed when things go wrong. For some people, this isn't a problem. Taking care of the daily tasks and keeping the wheels rolling is something they enjoy. Much like the offensive line, they keep things moving and make up the backbone of the team. If this is you and you actually enjoy this stuff, managing your own properties, at least in the beginning stages, may make sense. But if this isn't you, I would consider more than just money before jumping in. In my opinion, most people who choose to manage a property don't do it because they believe they'll be good at it. They do it because they want to save money. Not always a good move. Managing a property, much like other jobs, is an acquired skill. It takes a certain kind of mindset, temperance, disposition, and ability to communicate that makes this possible. Before attempting to learn this trade, ask yourself if it's really the best use of your time. Is the money you save doing this yourself more than you could make doing something else like finding a new deal, managing a rehab, or working overtime at your current job? Don't assume you're saving money by doing a job yourself. Sometimes it costs you money in the long run by robbing you of time, energy, and effort you could have put somewhere else. Anytime we choose to do one thing, we choose not to do something else. This could be time spent with kids, time reading the next business book that could change your life, time in the gym, or simply time recharging so you can do everything else more effectively. Understand the value of your time before you decide to manage your own properties. The cons to this aspect of real estate are significant. Pros to property management. There are many pros to property management, but the best reason might surprise you. In my opinion, the best pro to using property management isn't the money you save. It's the experience you leverage by using someone else who is better at this and has done this longer than you. This is where you learn how to become a better investor, see things through different eyes, and improve your own systems through being exposed to those of others. A good property manager has to be efficient. They don't make much money for what they do, so if they want to turn a profit, they need to have high volume. In order to handle this increased workload, they have no choice but to develop killer systems to save time and money. If you get close enough to them, you can learn from the way they have set up these systems and start implementing them in your own business. Property managers often need to find cheap handymen. If you find the one they are using, you may just be able to use them on your other properties as well. Another pro to property management is the fact you can learn a lot about an area through asking their opinion of it. You may be managing one or two houses. Most property managers are handling many more than that. They know which areas draw their best tenants. They know what amenities tenants in an area want. They know how long units are staying vacant, where people are moving to, and which areas are seeing rent go up the fastest. When you use a property management company, you are gaining access to all this intel as you gather it from them. property managers also understand the law much better than most investors do. After all, it's their job. Now, to be clear, I'm not referring to a real estate agent who manages property on the side. I'm talking about a business or a company that deals solely with managing rental property. The final big pro to using property management is you get to benefit from their experience. Property managers screen tenants for a living. They are much better at recognizing a good one than you would be just starting out. They can start, execute, and finish an eviction much faster than you, as they are more experienced in doing them and have more resources to throw at them than most of us. We have to take time from finding a deal or working our full-time job to manage the eviction. But for a property manager, this is their full-time job. Property managers also know how to get tenants to pay on time, or can advise you on matters like not taking partial rent from a tenant you plan to evict. Many a newbie investor has made a mistake like this. Don't let that be you. You can benefit from their knowledge and experience by hiring a good property manager. Cons to property management. The biggest con to using property management is it's hard to find a good one. In fact, finding even a decent one can seem hard. It takes a lot of time, as well as some trial and error, to find a property manager that will work for you and meet your needs. This upfront investment is one of the biggest cons to property management. Another big con is the money you have to spend. As we've already covered, their services aren't free, and you have to pay them to do the jobs you don't want to do. Many investors see a better ROI by avoiding paying for property management and don't want to give that up. Others buy a property without budgeting for property management fees and end up in a situation where they literally can't pay for one without losing money every month. Property management eating into the bottom line is another big reason people don't like them. The last con is the fact that property managers will usually tell you what you want to hear up front, and it's not until later that you find out you're not happy with their services. At that point, it can be costly to get out of your agreement, and you may find yourself stuck with this property manager. Having to go through an experience like this can really sour you on using property management and can make the entire process more frustrating than it already is. How to find a great property manager. So, how do we find a great property manager that isn't a dud? If finding a good one is so important, it stands to reason we should make this a priority in our business, right? Your property manager will become the only link between you and your property. They will be caring for it, managing it, and helping it thrive. If you get a good one, not only will they manage your property well, but they will also help you grow your business. Just like every other part of your business, finding a great talent starts with getting referrals. Great referrals come from great people and can help successfully grow your business. When you boil it down, there are traditionally two ways to hire someone. 1. Sift through strangers found through random means and trust your gut. 2. You interview strangers found through trusted sources and trust a combination of your gut and the information provided to you by people you trust. Which would you rather do? I know for me, it's option 2. I prefer having someone referred to me because it either came from someone I've worked with and trusted, or from a rock star who I know would demand a high level of execution. And it's not like I have to fly blind, because I will still be able to interview the referral myself. I'll also be informed if the property manager has any weaknesses and can decide for myself if I'd help them improve, or should move on to another candidate. The important thing is that I'll know ahead of time, not when it's too late. You'll save time and money when you hire trusted referrals rather than a stranger whose claims you can't back up. These are all strong reasons why I believe the first place we should look for help is from the people we already know who are crushing it in their line of work. For example, Grant Cardone is nationally recognized as a big-time investor who buys big-time properties and is running an effective business. If he's using a property manager for one of his buildings, what are the odds that person sucks at their job? Not very high. I don't know Grant, but I know his level of success, and I doubt he's very likely to allow subpar performance from someone managing one of his properties. Who do you know that is already crushing it in a space that you can ask for a referral from? If the only people you know have no reason to help you out, what can you do to incentivize them to help you? Finding out what others need and meeting those needs is a great way to get them interested in doing the same for you. Learning how to meet others' needs is a powerful business skill to develop. Why not start now to accomplish this important task of finding a great PM? Another great place to look for a referral is BiggerPockets.com. Many of the regular contributors on BiggerPockets have content you can read through to see if they know what they are talking about or not. BiggerPockets makes it simple to search through the site and find content each member has provided. In addition to finding members who can provide referrals, you can also find property managers themselves on the site. Remember, for every problem you have investing in real estate, there is a person whose job it is to fix that problem. These people are looking for you. They are looking to find business for themselves, and you are their client. Finding solid, reputable property managers on BiggerPockets is a matter of searching for them in the navigation bar, finding a few who seem intelligent, then researching their name to see what other investors have to say about them. One way to verify if your PM has a good reputation is to ask them what other BiggerPockets members they are managing property for. Once they give you the names, simply send a colleague request to that member and start a dialogue asking them what they like and don't like about this particular property manager. Most investors love to talk about real estate investing and will tell you everything you could want to know about the property manager. If the majority of the time is spent venting about what they don't like, that's not a good sign. If you ask several investors and they all provide you with the same negative feedback, that's not a good sign either. Your goal is to interview several different investors who use the same property manager and look for patterns in the feedback. If one investor says the PM is slow getting back to them, it may be because that investor is particularly annoying and the PM is avoiding them in order to stay productive. If the majority of the investors are all saying the same thing, you have found a pattern and should recognize that. Patterns reflect what you can expect. If the majority of the feedback you receive is positive or negative, that's what you can expect to experience yourself. The final way I look for great property managers is by asking members of my Core 4 which property managers they or their clients are using. Remember, I try to only work with Core 4 members who invest themselves. This means they are more likely to have a property manager I can trust. If they work with many different investors, odds are they are seeing the same property management company being used for the majority of their clients. This would represent a pattern and would be a positive indication I should be digging deeper into that company and finding more out regarding why they are so popular. How to interview your property manager. A good reputation is a strong starting point, but it's only the beginning of your due diligence. Once you find a PM with a good reputation, it's time to interview them to find out if the two of you would be a good fit. As with any good relationship, it's important to remember the interview is composed of two parts. 1. Determining if the PM is a good fit for your needs and expectations. 2. Determining if you are a good fit for the property manager's needs and expectations. You may find it surprising that the second part exists. Many people forget that even though they are hiring the property manager, they are still entering into a business relationship, and relationships are always two-way streets. If you find yourself not holding up your end of the bargain, you are also likely to find the communication souring between the two of you as the relationship deteriorates. If this happens, everybody loses. When I interview a property manager, I am looking to accomplish four things. 1. Find out about them as a person. 2. Find out about their experience and skill as a property manager. 3. Find out if they invest in real estate themselves. 4. Gather a list of resources for me to verify them with. Because my first priority is to learn about them as a person, I usually start the conversation there. By asking them personal questions about their life and work, I can get a better feel for who they are, what their values are, and sometimes even gather information regarding their character. It's important at this stage to ask open-minded questions and let them talk as much as possible without interrupting. I've found if I'm not careful, I'll guide the person I'm interviewing to answer in the way I'm looking for, and this isn't helpful. By limiting my participation in the early stages of the interview, I'm more likely to see who this person is at their core. If the property manager has a hard time answering simple questions like this, it doesn't mean they can't do the job, but it would be concerning to me. Part of what makes a PM good is their persuasive ability to get tenants to pay or adjust a tenant's unrealistic expectations. For most tenants who are short on money any particular month, they will have the money to pay rent, but will choose to pay other bills instead. A good property manager can use their skills to get the tenant to pay their rent before paying other bills and keep them from being evicted in the process. Below are some of the open-ended questions I use to start off a conversation with a PM. What got you started in the business? What do you find to be the most challenging part of this business and why? What do you find to be the most rewarding part of the business and why? What are some of the attributes of your favorite clients? How do you handle difficult clients? Which type of properties do you like to manage and why? Which areas in town are you familiar with and manage? What are your plans for the future? What do you do for fun? If you were immediately gifted with 5 insanely talented employees, what are the parts of the job you would never want to give away because you enjoy it so much, and why? Asking questions like this forces the person I'm interviewing to share more of who they are and what they believe their strengths are. It also lets me know what I can expect from them and how they like to operate. By asking questions about their ideal client, they share with me the blueprint for how I can win with them. By asking questions about their nightmare clients, I learn what I need to avoid. The trick is, most people will answer what makes a dream or nightmare client by responding with what they enjoy most or least about the job. If a nightmare client is someone who never listens to them, I know they have a high level of confidence about their opinion. If their dream client is someone who emails instead of calls, I know their system is set up to support that level of communication better than a phone call. Again, the key is to get them talking without interrupting or guiding them. Asking open-ended questions prevents them from answering with yes or no, and also prevents them from telling you what they think you want to hear. If I find the PM is extremely unskilled at carrying on a conversation and establishing rapport, I would ask, who does the communicating with the tenants? If they give me someone else's name, I would end the interview by asking for that person's contact info. If they tell me it's them who communicates with the tenants, and they are not great at conversing, I wouldn't consider hiring them since a strong ability to communicate is too important an element of doing a property manager's job. When I'm listening to their answers, I'm looking for a particular pattern to reveal itself. I want to see a trend of several character traits that are going to make me feel more comfortable in trusting them with my properties. These trends include blunt honesty, pickiness with who they take on as clients, specificity regarding how they handle problems or which of their employees handle problems, details regarding the systems they have in place, a proactive rather than a reactive approach, a specific market knowledge about real estate, a flexibility to learn better ways or get better at their job, the fact they own and invest in real estate themselves. The ability to understand the language of real estate investors. Cap rates, ROI, cash flow, CapEx, etc. A strong understanding of current rental rates. A strong understanding of the economic environment. Makes sense, right? By asking the right questions and carefully analyzing their answers, you can get a good idea for if the property manager really is the rock star you were told they were, or if they are ruthlessly good at tricking people into believing they are. The questions I ask are too specific to real estate and too detailed for them to lie their way through, giving me a higher level of confidence they know what they are talking about. If you don't like the answers the property manager has given you, politely end the interview and excuse yourself from the conversation. If you do like the answers they've provided you, congratulations, you are halfway done. The next part consists of clearly communicating your needs, your expectations, and what you can bring to the relationship. If what you bring matches what they want, you just might have found yourself a match. I always like to present myself in the same way. I explain where I'm from and how I got started. I go on to talk about what my needs are right now, then finish by detailing what my future plans are. While talking, I pay careful attention to their facial expressions. Many people have a difficult time keeping a poker face while listening to someone else talk. A flash of their eyes widening lets you know you just said something that impressed them. Or a furrowing of the brow lets you know you touched on a nerve and said something they don't like or don't agree with. The way they respond when I talk lets me know if my goals and values align with theirs. And that's what I'm looking for. My story would go something like this. Well, I'm a police officer who started working lots of overtime and using the money to buy rentals. Because it took so much time and effort to save the money to buy these properties, I obviously value them very highly. They are representative of hours and hours, years really, of lost sleep, damaged relationships, and unhealthy living. I gave it all up to get the money to buy them, so the way they perform is really important to me. Now I'm looking to buy 1 to 2 properties a month. If you do a good job with the properties I give you, I see no reason why I couldn't bring them all to you. What's most important to me is you are brutally honest. Anyone can manage a property halfway decently and collect rent. I need more than that. I need advice on which markets to invest in, which parts of town to stay away from, what kind of rehab work I should be doing, and who the best agents, lenders, and rehabbers to work with are. In the future, I plan on buying 3 to 5 properties a month. I'd like to own 75 to 100 units in the next 10 years, and I'd prefer to use the same property manager for all of them. What's important to me is that my PM is handling all the issues I can't, and making sure my portfolio is profitable enough for it to make sense for me to keep buying. I need repair costs to be low and for rents to be raised every year consistent with the market average. As I'm speaking, I'm looking closely at the facial expressions of the PM to see if they agree or disagree with my feelings. These tells are what I rely on more than the actual answers they give me. It's easy to fake a reply when you have time to think about what you're going to say. It's very difficult and takes a high level of focus and determination to fake facial expressions. These are all tricks I learned working as a cop, by the way. When suspects would lie, there was almost always a way you could tell by their response, and it had very little to do with the actual information they were providing. A change in the tone of voice, a look of, oh shoot, given away by raised eyebrows, a hesitancy to speak after they just opened their mouth to reply. All these things gave away the true feelings of the suspect and were much more accurate than how clever they were with their words. In the first paragraph, I say, I obviously value them very highly. This is me explaining I'm going to have a high standard for the property manager. If they are in agreement with the value I place on my properties, I'd expect to see a subtle head nod or them inching forward to get closer to me as a way to display their interest in something I just said. If they look taken aback, fearful, or give a smug smile, they are giving away the fact that they think I take my portfolio too seriously or that it's unrealistic to expect them to care as much as I do. In the third paragraph, I say, I prefer to use the same property manager for all of them. At this point, I'm expecting a look similar to a dog when dinner is about to be served. I want them to look hungry. Any property manager worth their salt would be sensing this means big opportunities, and they don't want to screw it up. If I don't see a positive response, I'd be worried. I may even find they interrupt me at this point to let me know how good they are and how they won't let me down. This would be a good thing. I want to see they are excited and really want to impress me. If they look apathetic, I would be concerned because it shows they are not particularly driven to succeed. If they aren't driven to succeed for themselves, why would they be for me and my portfolio? In the final paragraph, I say how making sure my portfolio is profitable enough for it to make sense for me to keep buying. At this point, I'm expecting to see a long, slow nod, indicating they understand the picture I have been painting and are eager for the ability to show me what they can do. I've painted a very ambitious picture for them regarding my future goals, and I've done this on purpose. If they have a deer in the headlights look, it's more than likely because they know they don't have the systems, people, or infrastructure to handle what I want to do. If they have the look of eagerness paired with understanding, it likely means they believe they are just the person to help me achieve my goals. Now, I haven't explained what to look for at every turning point of the conversation, but I think I've explained enough for you to understand what you should be noticing. Practice talking and articulating your thoughts without being so focused on yourself that you miss catching how others are reacting as you talk. You'll be amazed at how much information people give away with no idea they are doing it. The last thing I want to take from a conversation with a PM is a list of other investors they work with. Now, of course, they are likely to only refer me to people who love them the most. I get that. But I don't let that deter me. It's not their job to provide me with referrals that will provide me with bad feedback. It's my job to dig deep on these referrals and find out what it's really like to work with this PM. If I can get a list of names, a sense of confidence that this PM can handle what I want, and a strong feeling from them that they want to work with me, I'm usually ready to consider hiring them for the job. How to establish systems with your property manager. Once you've decided you want to start working with a PM, it's important to note I don't think it's a good idea to give them your entire portfolio right away. If you have a portfolio, I'd recommend giving them one property to manage. If you don't have a portfolio yet, and this would be your first time property, I would recommend buying your first place and letting them manage it, then finding a different property manager to manage the second. As a rule, I have a minimum of two property managers in every market I invest in. This serves several purposes. The most important being, if there is a change of leadership in one, someone quits, sells the company, dies, etc., I have a backup plan in place to take over my portfolio. The other big reason is if a property manager starts to do less than a stellar job, I'm not forced to stay with them and be frustrated. And why do property managers sometimes do less than stellar jobs? It typically comes down to two reasons. One, lack of effort or care. Two, lack of systems. A lack of effort is something I can't fix. If my PM is showing a lack of effort or concern for my properties, I can't do anything about that but find someone new. Lack of systems, however, is something I can help them with. Creating systems to manage my own business is something I'm always looking to accomplish. After all, that's an entire section of this book. It's important when we first start working with a property manager that we develop systems with them to get the desired results. All good systems start with communication. The property manager needs to know what I expect, and my expectations need to be reasonable. It is one thing to say, I expect a phone call every week to tell me nothing happened, or a weekly walkthrough of my property. It is another thing to expect a property manager to actually do that, without paying them, that is. Property managers run on slim margins, and for those who don't understand that, they can get a little unreasonable with some of their requests. Communicating your needs to the PM is important, but so is listening to them. If they tell you it's not going to happen, or you'll be charged extra for that. Once you've communicated your expectations, the PM is likely to let you know the systems they currently have in place to meet your needs. Unless you are their first client, they likely already have at least a few systems to help run their business. Common systems I see are online portals that allow investors to check to see what rent came in that month, monthly automatic email statements, a policy that dictates the term of things like lease renewals, and rules set in place for when the PM will make a repair or replacement. Knowing what systems the PM already has in place will help you understand what to expect from them, as well as what you cannot yet expect from them. It is the things you cannot yet expect, because they do not have a system in place, that you need to start addressing with the PM. This communication is crucial. I find that the majority of relationships that go sour are from expectations not being met. The most common cause of unmet expectations is poor communication of those expectations in the first place. Lack of communication takes place for several reasons. Sometimes one party is too shy, other times they get too busy. Sometimes one believes it is common sense and they shouldn't have to say anything about it. Other times, we know in our hearts the expectation is unreasonable, so we just avoid mentioning it. In some cases, we are so afraid of conflict or not being liked that we won't say how we feel or what we want or need. Regardless of the reason, if we don't communicate our expectations, we have no one but ourselves to blame when things go badly because of it. One big topic I want to make sure I cover with the property manager is who they will send to do work when something goes wrong. Most PMs have a system in place for sending someone to do work when a tenant requests it, but many of them don't verify that the work is actually the landlord's responsibility. It is much easier to just pay someone to make the problem go away using the landlord's money as long as the landlord isn't noticing it. This is one of the problems with authorizing a PM to make repairs under a certain amount without your approval. You can't know if the repairs are something you should be paying for. To cover this problem, I'll request the PM create a system of notifying me or my representative when a tenant makes a claim. I ask for a picture of the damage to be provided, as well as a description of how the tenant believed it happened and how they discovered it. After this, I ask the PM to send me an email with their recommendation on who should pay for it and why. If the PM recommends I pay for it, I ask them what in a lease or in landlord case law justifies this opinion. Most PMs know if they can't provide this, it's better not to even ask me. In those cases, they tell the tenant they should pay for it before the request even makes it to me. Creating this system keeps me from paying for things I shouldn't, just because it's easier for the PM to resolve the problem that way. If an issue arises and it's determined to be my responsibility to fix, the PM can either send a handyman they have on the payroll or call someone I prefer using. This is something I want to square away early on, because many PMs use management agreements that specify they have the right to send their own person. In most cases, I want to find a handyman of my own choosing, not theirs. I prefer this because I trust my own handyman more. They are usually cheaper, and I can get info from them regarding the condition of the property and how the tenants are taking care of it when they show up to make the repairs. I'm not likely to get this from the property manager's recommendation. Another system I like to create with my PM is to have them set a reminder to notify me 2 months before a tenant's contract is set to expire. I want to know 2 months ahead of time so I can start doing research to find what current market rents are and give the tenant the opportunity to renew their lease before it goes month to month. This also gives me the opportunity to consider selling the property if that's an option, but most importantly, it makes sure the PM doesn't forget the lease is month to month and go to the tenant with a rent increase letter. I also go over with my PM how I want to receive my money. Some PMs want to send you a check in the mail, as it can be easier for them, but this does not work for me. Having to run to the bank to deposit checks is one reason why I don't want checks mailed to me. I prefer to receive mine via direct deposit or mobile deposit, and it's important to communicate this to the PM before signing an agreement with them. This is when you have your leverage. If you want your money deposited a certain way, you have a much better chance of getting them to agree to an exception when they are still trying to win your business than you do after they have already won it. Creating systems you and your PM are both comfortable with is a crucial part of ensuring your rental property business runs smoothly. Be sure you read the entire management agreement before signing it, as oftentimes you are going to be charged for things you assumed were included in the monthly percentage you're paying for. Lease renewals, handyman callouts, and walkthroughs are all things property managers used to do for free but now charge for. Reading their agreement and negotiating what you want changed is something you should do early on in the relationship if you want things to go well. Key points. Have your PM notify you 2 months prior to your property's lease ending. Buy near hospitals. Buy near good schools. Know the pros and cons to self-management versus professional management. Learn how to find and interview property managers. Part 5. The Refinance Process. Chapter 8. Choosing Your Lender. 20 years from now, you will be more disappointed by the things that you didn't do than by the ones you did do. Mark Twain. A crucial part of ensuring the BRRRR process works for you is to know you can actually pull money out before you start the process. It can be crippling to your success if you invest all your capital in acquisition and rehab of a property, only to find out at the end of the project that you can't qualify for a loan and can't refinance the deal. Talk about watching your ROI plummet. The wise investor makes sure they are pre-approved for a loan before writing offers, and this will pay off for you at the end. Finding a lender to give you good terms and approve you to borrow money is